This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See McDonald's.com. And welcome back to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman. Joining me right now is Yannis Chanais, Mats Cohen, and Craig Coben, who was actually at this victory for Fulham. We're going to be talking about the 3-0 victory for Fulham against Brighton Hove Albion at Craven Cottage. This should be fun. I look forward to it. We got a full house of co-hosts here, so let me go around the table. Let's start with Mr. Chanais. How are you doing? It's been a while. How's everything going, Yannis?
Good. And nice to, you know, with life going on and all its trials and tribulations, it's nice to get a couple of wins. You know, beating the manure last week and then knocking off the Gulls this week and hopefully the Wolves next week and then that lot from Tottenham following. Play. It's good. It's good to get some wins and at least we look pretty safe now.
I would say so. Mr. Cohen, how are we doing? Just talked to you last week. It's good to have you back on with, like I said, this full house we have.
Yeah, it's great to win two matches in a row, both teams above us in the league. And like Yannis said, we're looking pretty safe. We're closer to Arsenal in third than we are to Luton in the bottom three. So that's the one way to look at it in terms of our season. And there were a couple weeks or months when we were maybe a bit concerned looking over our shoulder, but I think it's fair to say we're staying up this year. And I think the most important thing now is finish strong and try to plan for another year in the Prem, which, although we expect it to happen, it's still a great achievement for us given we just got promoted couple years ago.
Okay, excellent. I guess I could say optimist, Max.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, let's just say Rodrigo Muniz. Is he the best player we've ever seen for Fulham? I'm kidding. But I mean, it shows how quickly fan sentiment can change. I was saying this with Dan and you last week, Russ.
Yeah.
The way he played away at Bournemouth on Boxing Day compared to how he's played in the last month, it's like a different person. And I don't know. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on what changed for him or what tactically or what Marco said to him. But he looks like almost a replacement for Mitra. I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but the way he's played, the way he played, I mean, that was one of the best games I've seen from a striker all season for Fulham. So we can get into that.
Okay, before I go to Craig, I have to share this from Steve Reynolds. We are 4 wins away from world domination. Love it. Love it. Okay, Craig, how you doing? How was the match yesterday? Give me your opening thoughts. But before I do that, welcome back.
Thank you, Russ. And great to see you guys. The atmosphere was pulsating in the Hammersmith End. A lot of singing, a lot of joy. We've had some great matches over the years against Brighton at home. I remember the 4-2 come from behind victory in 2018, the 2-1 victory last season, even the 1-0 victory away last season where we really scored a late goal by Manor Solomon against the run of play. This was a great win. I actually thought Brighton were pretty good. They dominated possession, but we dominated the scoreboard. And it shows a lot that our team was able to weather the storm, soak up the pressure, and score more or less in the counterattack. And I thought we played pretty well, given that we were faced off against a very strong team.
Okay, great stuff. Over to you, Yannis, your opening thoughts.
It's a good win. Brighton, I think Black Whiteford just put it on the chats, and he's absolutely right about it's nice to be a bogey team, and we are their bogey team. For some inane reason, Brighton play us, and it just doesn't work for them. I think first half they had 71% possession and played well. And forget, I mean, they talk about, you know, obviously Matoma's out, Gross was on the bench, you've got Tosoli March out for the season. But despite that, we've got injuries too. And it was always going to be a difficult game. And I thought we gave a very good account of ourselves. And I know we've got a lot of time for Brighton and what De Zerbi's done down there. So a really good 3 points. And, you know, our form at the moment is good, which gives us a lot of hope for the last 11 games.
Okay. Max, over to you. Your opening thoughts on this victory. It's so great that I can have you on 2 weeks in a row after a Fulham victory.
Yeah, no, it's great to be on. I think, you know, what Craig said is correct. Brighton showed up to play, but we managed the game in a very professional way. You know, they dominated possession, but unless, I mean, there was that spell in the second half when they hit the post and, you know, Ferguson seemed to have 3 1-on-1 chances with Leno when we kind of rode our luck. But this was a professional Premier League performance, which we're not necessarily used to seeing from us. And I think at times, if we concede at 2-0 and it's 2-1, then it gets nervy. But we just rode our luck a bit. Delighted personally for Traore. Great finish. For all the stick he gets about his end product and his injuries, he's now assisted the winner at United and scored his first goal for the club in two matches. Harry Wilson, let's also not forget. As well as Muniz played, I think Wilson played equally as well.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we're doing it without Paulinho, which is big.
Yes.
We're doing it without Willian starting, who, you know, people see as our best player sometimes, and without Jimenez. So it's almost important to say everyone that's missing, and we're still playing excellent. And let's not forget, Marco Silva is at the heart of it all. He is 100% to credit for this win and last week's win as well. When it looked like we had that period when we lost to Liverpool in the Cup, lost to Newcastle, fan protests. The season just a month and a half ago looked like it was ending for a pretty poor end. And we've turned it around. And I think that's credit to the manager.
Absolutely. We're going to be talking about him coming up. But before we do that, Craig, I want to go back to you. Here's an interesting question for you. You were there. Should Fulham have won by more? They created a tremendous amount of opportunities. 3-0 is great. Should it have been by more?
No. Look, we could have made it 3-0 a bit earlier. There were a couple of squandered chances. But I think if we had made it 3-0 earlier, that probably is where the game would have ended up. I mean, this was one of the most evenly matched 3-0 games you'll ever see. I don't think the scoreboard reflects the fact that the play was pretty even, the fact that Brighton dominated possession. And on the pitch, it was a fairly even match. It's just we took our chances and they didn't. And as soon as we were up, there were chances at their end of the pitch because they were throwing men forward. I mean, the second half, what's extraordinary is that there were no goals until the injury time goal by Traore. I mean, there were just so many chances. There was so much space out there because Brighton were throwing men forward to try to get back in the game.
Okay, excellent. Over to you, Giannis. Let's be honest here, in the second half especially, Brighton Hove Albion had a couple of chances there that just didn't go their way. So I see where Craig's point that if you look at the possession that he had, that Brighton had, you could make the argument that the scoreline is fair, but I'm just asking the question because Fulham did create more opportunities there.
Could have been 6-3. It could have been 7-4. I mean, they created a lot of chances. We did as well. I thought, you know, we're going to go to the lineups. I think their defeat should go down to De Zerbi. I think he's to blame for it.
Okay.
Because I thought their lineup was, as soon as I saw it, I thought we'll win this. I just thought it was naive. I know they've got Roma this week in the Europa Cup. I just thought it was disrespectful in terms of how they put that midfield together, and really thought that a team had just gone up to Old Trafford and won the way they did and made no changes was going to be a pushover at a place which tends to be a graveyard for Brighton. And the first half, coming in a half-time 2-0 down, he realised that it wasn't going to work. Brighton were good value for the entertainment. They created some chances. Ferguson really had a huge one. He should have put away. But we talk about Muniz and Ferguson. It's really about confidence, isn't it? Ferguson looks lost. He hasn't scored since 1950. And Munoz has now scored 5 and 5. And his confidence is just top shelf right now. And that was the big difference between the two sides.
Okay, so basically we're coming down to the striker and finishing. Very interesting there. Yeah, it's over to you, Max. Your thoughts. Should Fulham have won by more? Craig makes an argument that it was a pretty even match, obviously, except for the finishing here.
I mean, we won 3-0, so I don't think we could have won by more. I think the fair result might have been 3-1. I think we edged it,
okay.
maybe not 3-0. Yeah, you know, Harry Wilson went through on goal and put it wide. Pereira somehow didn't hit the target, I think, or didn't score on two occasions when we won it high up the pitch. So we definitely had more chances than the scoreline suggested. You know, Iwobi had a great pull into Wilson that was blocked. It could have been a shot on target. So we played well, but I think that it was the scoreline was correct, even if it flattered us a bit.
Okay. It was kind of a loaded topic there, but I just wanted to throw it out there. All right. Back over to you, Craig. I think this is really where I want to get to talking about the game plan for Marco. And I thought Marco outcoached De Zerbi. We've already talked a little bit about that. You guys have talked about it. So I want to talk about this because I saw an interview with Harry Wilson afterwards, and he basically, in paraphrasing, talked about how they were prepared for this. They knew how they were going to play, that they were not going to have the ball as much, and they were going to take advantage of their opportunities. That's exactly what we saw here. So thoughts on Marco's game plan, because it was more of a counterattacking game plan here.
Well, he adapted to the players that he had. When you have Kearney and Willian in the lineup, we tend to build along that left side and play a possession game. This time we had different personnel. We had, you know, Lucic and Reed again in the midfield. And I think the priority was first to make sure that we could break their press. And I think we did a reasonable job. A couple of times they caught, you know, they dispossessed us. But I think we did a reasonable job with their press. And the second was just to make sure we didn't lose our shape in defense. And I think we did a good job there. It was only in the second half a little bit. Sometimes they went over the top and got through. But certainly in the first half, we looked, you know, very, very solid. And then the counterattacking was incredibly fluid and quick. And it was actually, I didn't look at the statistics, but it was probably more on the right than on the left, which is unusual for us. For most of the season, most of the recent games, we've been attacking much more on the left than on the right. And certainly our second goal came from a counterattack on the right side. So, you know, I mean, they lined up in an interesting way, Brighton, right? They had three at the back, sort of a 3-4-2-1 or 3-4-3.
I'm sure
you tactical geniuses will know better than I will. But, you know, they were quite narrow and they're trying to play through the middle. And I think we weren't really caught, you know, unaware. So even though they had a lot of the possession, they didn't have, especially in the first half, they didn't have very many openings.
No. And that's what's interesting about this. And over to you, Giannis, because a thought of mine before the match when I did my preview was, how was Fulham going to play this match? Were they going to play how we normally play? Or was it going to be a little bit like how we played against Manchester United, play more narrow? So I find it interesting that Harry Wilson basically comes out and tells you that the game plan was to basically beat them on the counter, that they were going to have more of the ball and take it from there. So what are your thoughts about how the team prepared for this and how it executed?
It was a clever game plan. And I think that Marco also looked at the fact that they would have had one eye ahead on the Roma game, but they're not going to admit this. I know De Zerbi made a reference to it afterwards that they deserve to be with the eye on the Europa League, and that's great. But you can't deny that the players are probably very, very excited about it. It's a huge occasion. We went through it, you know, 12, 13 years ago, so we know. And it looked like the lineup that they set up was safe. And Marco used the confidence of having that same lineup with the same approach against Man U to play at home, knowing that we're very, very good on the counter. We're really, really quick on the counter. And against United last week, I think that was the big thing that impressed me. They really seemed to have no answer for what was going on the break. And again, if you look at that Brighton back three, you know, Duncan, Webster, and you had Van Hecker dropping, they're not very quick. They're really not. The super defenders in terms of ball playing, but on the counter, they're all over the shop. And it was obviously we were prepped for it. And it's good as well. It's good, especially without Paulinho in the lineup, because
right.
There's going to be some difficult decisions to make for the Wolves game. I think Wolves is going to be a very interesting game because we've got Wolves and then we've got Tottenham. The Wolves game, we could pull level with them if we win. And he may have to make a couple of really interesting decisions to see how he plays this, especially in light of the way we played yesterday and last week against Manu. Does he follow the same approach again? Does it work? We shall see. I've got a controversial comment before the end of the show about where I think we should go next week. But
okay, very good. Giannis, just want to mention you already jumped ahead because that'll be our next topic where we actually talk about the starting 11 and what does Marco do for next week. I'm glad that you brought us there. But before we go there, Max, I want to go to you because, again, when I watched this interview after the match from Harry Wilson and Rodrigo Muniz, I just found it fascinating that Harry Wilson comes out and basically tells you how well they prepared for this. I don't think that they were going to concede the possession, but I think they understood what they would need to do if that happened, right? If they were not going to have a lot of the possession, they knew what to do. So I think the game plan here by Marco was very good, but the players had to go out and execute it, and they did.
Sure, and we did benefit, though, from the team selection. I think it's proper to note that, as you guys have, is that this was a second-choice Brighton team. And as Giannis mentioned, I mean, it's disrespectful. You can understand why they did it. But I think part of the Zerbi thought he could just roll up to the cottage with a second-choice team and they could still get the job done. I mean, they're also coming off. They had some big wins recently. I think away at Sheffield United, they put up a bunch of goals. So they're not in poor form either. And he completely got it wrong. He did not anticipate, I think, that Fulham were going to be so up for it. The counterattacking was great. I think I wasn't very impressed by Lamptey and Estupiñán, who, in my mind, are very quality wingbacks, but we seemed to deal with them at ease. And yeah, the center back trio wasn't up for it, really, in my mind, for Brighton. And Giannis mentioned they're great ball playing center backs. I agree, but you know, they let Muniz drift in without a touch on him for the second goal, and got beaten twice in the air by him for the first goal. So as much as you know, we should respect Brighton, Muniz, a relatively newcomer to the Premier League, bullied them in the first half.
Okay, excellent stuff. All right, Craig, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on the starting 11, okay? So let's start there, and then we're going to talk about moving forward with the starting 11. Just in general, your thoughts on the decision to stick with the starting 11 from the Manchester United match and play probably, and it did play out the way that they did prior. So what are your thoughts about that decision? Because I think that wasn't the easiest decision to make because you had a couple players that were going to be available, like Willian. You didn't have Paulinho, but he decided to stick with those 11. What are your thoughts?
It's interesting. You know, not starting Willian and Kearney was a big decision because
right.
That combination you know, has been really effective for us in several matches. But I guess Silva's thinking was that we should stick with the lineup that was successful against Manchester United, and that he can always make the changes later in the game and bring them on. And I think he was, broadly speaking, vindicating that decision. I think, you know, Lukic and Reed have developed actually a pretty good partnership in the midfield, much better than probably any of us had expected. And I think Harry Wilson, you know, as a starter, as opposed to Bobby Decord over Reed, again, I think adds another dimension to our play. You know, he cuts in from the right side to get onto his left foot. And that's something we haven't had with Bobby Decord over here. And I would say, you know, we were a lot more active on that side of the pitch with Harry Wilson in the team. I think the other observation is, you know, when it comes to the back four, we play a pretty high back four. And the center backs are pretty aggressive. And I think, you know, we can get away with that with the players that we have. And in particular, I thought Bassi again was a standout performer in the back four, but so was Castagna. And so we seem to be quite even though we mix and match a little bit in the back four, we seem to be a lot more solid than we have been early in the season and certainly even the last season.
Well, let me go back to you. I'm glad that you talked about the center back pairing. Are you sold on this center back pairing for the rest of the season? Would you go with this?
Yes. Look, I think Ream is excellent on the ball, but he's also 34, 35 years old. And I think Bassey is just stronger, younger, and also quite good on the ball. And, you know, Tosin versus Diop, it's really hard to say that. I mean, Diop makes a lot of errors, and he is not as good on the ball as Tosin. Neither of them are fantastic. They're both big, strong defenders. But I think with Diop in the lineup, when they press us, they often will leave Diop alone and cover other men and shut down options for us. And it creates a bit of a dilemma on the pitch for us.
Okay, great stuff. Over to you, Giannis. I want to get your thoughts about the center back pairing, what Craig just shared. But overall, I want to talk about the starting 11. I also want to mention I just got a nice message from the Fulham Shadow, Emilio Danilo, who could not join us today, but wanted to say hello to you and the rest of the guys.
Hi, Teddy. Hope you're good, matey. I think the first one, Bassey and Tosin, good yep. partnership. I agree with Craig about Timmy, and he's going to be back next year. We know that. Diop is a little error prone, but they do their job. Starting 11, he had no choice. He had to pick this 11. They played so well against Man U. Where do you start? Yeah, Willian and Candy don't start, but he's also got to start planning for next year as well.
Right.
And looking at the combinations, Lukic at long last gets a bit of a run out. I've been crying for this kid to be playing. He was brilliant at Torino, and you now see his quality. Look at that challenge, that horrendous challenge last week. We know the one. Slabhead Harry. And there's no red. And then, yeah, you could see blood in his ankle and he carries on playing the way he did. You can't change a winning team. I'd be really surprised if Marco changes next week. Okay. I really would.
We're going to talk about that. Yeah, it's an interesting dilemma because we're going to talk about the Polina situation. Okay, we'll get to that in just a second. But before we do, I want to give Max his chance to talk about the starting 11 and the center back pairing. And Max, I'm sold on this center back pairing. I love Tim Ream just like anyone else. Diop, as the guys have already said, does have that mistake in him. So I understand why fans might want someone else because Tosin might not be with us the rest of the season. But I don't care. You got to play Tosin and Bassey right now. I think it's your best pairing.
I agree. They bullied Ferguson in a way. I think the Brighton defenders thought they would bully Muniz. I think the best part of the match for Bassey was when he just threw Ferguson 5 meters and then kind of laughed at him and said, "Welcome to the Premier League, you know, teenager." And Tosin he's excellent. You know, he's also had errors like Diop in his Fulham career. But I think the most important thing about Tosin is that his recovery speed is better than Diop's. And that to me is one of the most vital things for center back in the modern era is you have to be pacey. You have to be able to adapt. And I think that in a foot race, Tosin beats most strikers, honestly, which is really impressive. So I'm happy with Tosin and Bassey. We've talked about it before in the show, Russ, about, you know, yep. he looks like he might leave. To me, I hope he stays, but that shouldn't affect the selection in March. You know, you select your best team, and he's one of the best center backs.
That's right. You go with your best team, and it's going to be an interesting call for Marco for the upcoming match against Wolves. Giannis, I'm going to go to you first because we've already been talking about what's going to happen next. I find this fascinating, and I'm going to give you a scenario that someone gave to me today, okay? But should you stick with the starting 11? Should Marco stick with it for the Wolves match? Now, here's an interesting scenario that was given to me. Would you take out Reed and keep Lukic in there and put Paulinho back and have Lukic play a little further up with Pereira, have it those three? That's a scenario, but I want to get your thoughts because I think this is not an easy one. I mean, people can automatically think that Paulinho comes back in, right? Does he, though?
I say no. And I've got a couple of reasons for that. Firstly, Harrison and Sasha have done nothing wrong. They've done nothing wrong. They've had two excellent games recently. Number one. Number two, actually, the three. The second one is this is the, you know, he's been suspended again. And I think this is a means of Marco saying, well, you know what, you're a superb player for us, there's some indiscipline there. And when players have had to come in and fill the hole, the gap that you've left because you're suspended, and they do the job, to be fair, then how the hell do I not pick them? That's number two. And number three, if there's going to be any worry about Palhinha's minutes, Portugal have a couple of games coming up anyway soon. So in the international break, he'll get to play. So we shouldn't have to worry about match fitness and what have you. I think you go with your strongest available 11, but you've also got to put form in. And for me, Wolves is a great example of where you stick with your winning lineup. You talked about Bobby Day, Cordova Reed earlier, right? And Harry Wilson. We still have to play Newcastle, Tottenham, City, Liverpool at home. There are going to be plenty of opportunities to bed these players in. If Palhinha leaves this season, it's important at the end of the season, it's important to see what Harrison and Sasha can do together. These are valuable minutes, not just for now, but for the future. And that's why, knowing that we're relatively safe, I would take the gamble and I would start the same 11 next week against Wolves.
Very interesting. And it's an interesting call for Marco. Over to you, Craig. What are your thoughts about this? Because like I was talking about, it's a good problem to have, right? To figure out what you're going to do. But you do have who I think is your best player now going to be available for the Wolves match. But you also have to look at form and the cohesion that you're having with Reed and Lukic. Do you drop one of them to bring Palhinha back?
Look, I think you stick with the starting 11 that has won you the last two games. I think that makes a lot of sense, and you can have Palhinha on the bench and see how things go. If we were playing against Tottenham, I might revisit that question, because Tottenham is going to be another level of competition as opposed to, you know, Wolves or Brighton, or even, frankly speaking, Manchester United. I don't know if you know this, but you know, in the stands, we have a song for Harrison Reed, and you know, where he's known as the Ginger Iniesta.
Yep.
And if you do bring Palhinha in, I think he'd have to be in lieu of Lukic, because I do think you need to have, you know, a playmaker of some kind. I think moving Lukic up and putting Palhinha in is probably not the right structure.
Okay.
That we would have. I mean, Palhinha is the ultimate destroyer midfielder. And, you know, it's debatable, and it depends a little bit on the tactics that Marco wants to deploy. But I would have thought against the likes of Tottenham or Man City, you know, you need somebody like that to break up the play. So I would probably stick with the starting 11, have Palhinha on the bench. And, you know, it was quite clear that the players were fairly fatigued around 60, 65 minutes in this match. And, you know, Marco is a kind of reluctant. He's sometimes reluctant to bring on substitutes. He's often late bringing on substitutes. But maybe there'll be a reason to bring on substitutes a bit earlier next match.
Okay, interesting stuff. Okay, over to you, Max. Your thoughts about this conundrum. We can also throw in Willian starting as well, because he was available for this last match. He did not change it. So maybe there's an argument here that he will stick with the starting 11 against Wolves. Upcoming matches, then he'll have some other decisions like the guys are talking about with Tottenham on the horizon. I think Palhinha would be more needed maybe in that match. What are your thoughts about all this?
I'm going to go against the grain here and say you've got to start Palhinha. He's okay. Our best player. You don't leave your best player on the bench, even if the team's on great form, which they are. And it is harsh on either Lukic or Reed. And I'm honestly not sold on who comes out. But, I mean, João Palhinha, we've said it time and time again for Fulham, is of a different class. And the way he operates in the middle of the park, I think he's our most important player. So it's tough, but I think if he's fit, he has to start.
Okay, interesting stuff. Back over to you, Craig. Your thoughts on what Max just shared?
Look, that's a fair argument. I don't think the stakes are that high in this next match. And I think there is some benefit to having continuity and for rewarding the players who've played well. I think if the next match were against Tottenham, I would feel slightly differently.
Okay. Giannis, I'll give you final word on this.
I'm a loyalty kind of guy. I love Palhinha to death, but as I said, Lukic and Harrison have done nothing wrong. Keep him, as Craig said, sit him on the bench. Maybe bring him back for Tottenham. I still think we need to, with 11 games to go, we've got to look at partnerships. Lukic is going to be here next year. So is Harrison Reed. So let's see what they can do together. And then assess that way.
Okay, excellent stuff, guys. All right, coming up next, we're going to break down the match. We'll give our analysis of both halves and talk about the goals. And we'll end with man of the match. If you're watching live, feel free to share your thoughts on who was man of the match.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Okay, Craig, I'm going to go to you first. Let's just get your analysis of the first half, and then we'll talk about the two goals. But I just want to get your thoughts on what you watched at Craven Cottage, because it started off, as you mentioned, listen, the play was pretty even. The goals changed the match. But what did you see from Fulham in the first half, just overall?
Well, of course, both goals were at the opposite end from where I was standing in the Hammersmith end. Look, I thought the first half was pretty even. In fact, I even thought they started fairly well. Lamptey, who was substituted at halftime, actually caused, I think, Robinson a few difficulties. But they didn't really have any chances that I can remember off the top of my head, any significant chances on goal. They had a fair amount of the possession. The first goal changed everything, and it obviously came a little bit out of nothing. It was just a long ball that, you know, Munoz one was able to head over to Harry Wilson. And that really changed the kind of dynamic of the first half. Until then, I thought it was fairly even, slightly cagey, but, you know, they had a bit more of the possession, but we were never out of shape. And we were both sort of feeling each other around a little bit. The other observation I had made early in the first half was that their press was pretty well organized, and sometimes we had to hurry and kick it long just to clear the lines. They were putting our guys under pressure. Sometimes we managed to pass our way out, but sometimes we weren't. But it was a continuous challenge for us to break their press. But overall, even first half, but the goals changed everything, especially the first goal, which, as I said, came out of nothing.
Okay, excellent. Over to you, Max. I want to get your thoughts on the first half, just analysis. And like I said, we're going to go back and talk about the goals individually. But just give me your thoughts on what Craig shared, and what did you make of the first half? What were you thinking about when you're watching it at home?
I kept going back to something we talk about, which is, you know, just the timing of goals and the luck sometimes can just totally turn a match on its head. You know, it reminded me almost of that period in December when we were beating teams 5-0 weekly. And that's how it seemed. Every time we went forward, it looked dangerous and we were so clinical. And when you're 2-0 up half an hour in, you just have so much, it's such an advantage. The other team has to chase it. But I was thinking, I hope it doesn't, what happened against Bournemouth doesn't happen when they score really early on in the second half and then we're nervy. But the home form has been good for us. And I was just delighted by Muniz, because the way he stuck his head in there, the dangerous areas, fearless. It reminded me of Mitrovic. It really did. We have to talk about it, because
we're going to talk about it when we talk about the Muniz goal. You're already jumping ahead, Max.
Well, you asked me the first time. I can't contain my excitement for Muniz, Russ, which is just night and day from... Is this really the same player who struggled on loan at Burrow? You know,
yeah. Well, it's young, the same guy, but he's certainly young, playing at a different level.
And it says a lot to me about our own analysis. Sometimes we have to lay off the youngsters who are adapting to English football, because, I mean, he was nominated for Premier League Player of the Month.
That's right. So yeah, it's crazy.
Let's just remember that I was very harsh on him when he first came over here. I was harsh on him as recently as December.
I remember, Max. I remember. But you know what? What's good about you is that you will then assess when you see a player basically change. And you've seen that. So good for you for admitting a fault. How about that?
Well, thank you. Thank you, Ross. This is why you're the host. That's why you're the host of the most.
That's right. Well, thank you, Max. All right, over to you, Giannis. Let's talk about the first half. I promise we're going to talk about Muniz. I promise, because I want to go in a little bit of a discussion on that when we talk about his goal, because I think it's significant, and I think it talks about some other things that's going on with him. But I just want to get your thoughts, Giannis, when you're watching it at home. What was going through your mind watching that first half?
It was entertaining. It was entertaining, and it always is when we play Brighton. They're always good games. You know, they've got good individual players. They're very well coached. They pass the ball very well. The systems are good. They're pretty flexible. As I said, I wasn't particularly enamored with their lineup yesterday. But I did think that it was an entertaining first half, and it was a nip and tuck. But the goal sort of came about, the first goal came about from Muniz just being a total nuisance. And that's what he was in the whole game, a total nuisance. And if you've noticed with the 5 goals in 5 games, he's cut out a lot of the frill and the silly little back flicks and what have you. Now he's back to goal, holding the ball up. He's going up legitimately, looking to win every single aerial challenge. Lewis Dunk is one of the best in the division in the air. And he's going out there and he's firing on cylinders. So I think he's just, with him, I think he's just simplified his game. Okay. Somebody has told him, look, cut out the crap. Centre forwards do this, and there was a lot of Mitro about him because Mitro was always a pest, and there was no such thing as a ball that was ever lost, and it's good to see because everybody else on the field is busting a gut, so he's doing the same thing as well, and now you're seeing that centre forward play is lifting everybody else up, and that's why we're beginning to get the results that we are and the goals that he's scoring as well.
Okay, excellent. All right. Craig, I'm going to go to you. I want to talk about the goal from Harry Wilson. I know it was on the other end, but I would just want to get your thoughts on the goal. And what's interesting is that I listened to BBC Radio Sussex Final Whistle and heard some Brighton Hove Albion supporters that were very critical of their defenders on this goal, especially because they should know that he's an inverted winger and they need to stop him. What are your thoughts about, again, the header from Muniz to set up this wonderful goal from Harry Wilson, and thoughts about him playing on the right, being this inverted winger?
Well, it's not very common in the Premier League for the defenders to be bullied like that by number nine and to win the ball in this way to set up a goal. I mean, that shouldn't happen in the Premier League. And so I think there are questions to be asked about the Brighton defenders, that's not taking anything away from what Muniz accomplished in the air, but it really shouldn't happen. And I think the same thing had happened at our end, we'd be rightly critical of the center backs. I think we should also recognize that not only did Muniz do an incredible job winning the ball and heading it over to Wilson, but Wilson's finish was a fine finish.
Oh. Fantastic.
Admittedly, they should have gotten a bit closer to him, but it was still, he got the ball on his left foot, and that was a class finish, and the goalkeeper could do nothing about it. You know, it was a strange goal in the sense that, you know, what didn't come from build a play, didn't come from a counterattack, it just came from a long ball. You sometimes see that in League One, very occasionally in the Championship, almost never, really very rarely in the modern day Premier League. But you take them where you can get them. I mean, against Bournemouth, we had a defender slip and we scored our opening goal. And here we scored via Route 1. I'll take it.
I was going to say, Craig, I will take it too. So I understand where you're coming from. Giannis, in a way, it was almost going back to the Roy Hodgson days where you had Bobby Zamora playing that role. Okay. So your thoughts on the goal from Harry Wilson, but also obviously the play of Rodrigo Muniz. And we're going to dive into him a little bit more when we talk about his goal.
Yeah, it's like you can say the Brighton defenders, you know, Webster got bullied, silly, but it's like saying, okay, Harry Wilson is going to invert inside, you've got to stop him, but then try saying that to stop Foden. It's great to say try and stop him, but you have to try and stop him. And when Harry Wilson gets that little bit of space for Gadot, he's got a fantastic left foot. He really does. It was a beautiful goal. And again, you know, he's going to get all the plaudits for the finish, but it was Muniz who bullied defenders twice there. And, you know, that's just, it's great that you went back to Bobby Zamora, because Zamora, that's what Zamora used to be very, very good at. Yeah. We can play the direct game. We've got someone now that's going to bother teams. It's not just about, you know, if you've got players like William and Kearney sitting on the bench, you know, you could talk about changes, but look, we haven't mentioned Iwobi yet.
No, we have not. We have and not mentioned Iwobi, Alex Iwobi.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's the Old Trafford hero. And, you know, we've got, I think what I'm saying is we've got different approaches to hurt teams. And Muniz is one we've been crying out for the bulk of the season. And finally, he's beginning to develop. And you've got to remember, with centre forwards, it takes time.
Right.
And he's still only a baby. But he's on a real high. And I mentioned earlier about Evan Ferguson. Evan Ferguson's only 19, I know. But you see that goal, I think, last year, he'd have finished that chance. Good job by Leonard closing down, but he would have finished that. But at the moment, he's got no confidence. And these strikers are confidence focused. And that was what Muniz did with the first goal. And deserves a lot of credit for the way he hassled the defenders into making a mistake.
Okay, excellent. Over to you, Max. It's funny because I do want to get into talking about Rodrigo Muniz. So I want to get your thoughts on the goal from Wilson, but I want to transition and then focus on this goal, because they basically trade roles here, because now you have a cross from Harry Wilson that sets up Muniz to, as you're saying, a situation that you would see with Alexander Mitrovic often. So what's fascinating about this is that I thought he made Lewis Dunk look silly here. I mean, that's what's crazy about all this. We're talking about Rodrigo Muniz bullying players of that level. Just think about that. So let's talk about, get your thoughts on the goal from Wilson, then let's go right to talking about Rodrigo Muniz's goal, and we're going to talk about him a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, the goal from Wilson, I want to say Lukic makes a great run on the right wing, which forces the defender to kind of check back and gives Wilson an extra bit of space. So credit to Lukic for opening that up, because he didn't get the ball and he was frustrated, but he almost led to the goal indirectly. And then the Muniz goal, I mean, what a ball that is from Wilson. I think you have to single out Wilson again, because he puts all the pace on it and puts it just, I think it was Webster or Dunk, whoever was the first center back closer to the near post. He can't jump for it. It's right above his head. And that leaves the second center back on his heels. And the one making the perfect run with the great movement is Muniz, and doesn't have to put much pace on it because it's hit so well from Wilson. It's nicely redirected. And yeah, I mean, we've seen that goal so many times with Wilson and Mitro in the championship, it felt like. So it was major deja vu there, Russ. And I mean, what? How many goals has he scored in the past five games, Muniz? Is it five?
Five and five.
And Jimenez scored five in the past 5 years, so that's pretty good. Oh, just kidding.
Okay, very good. All right. Craig, I want to go back to you. I want to talk about Rodrigo Muniz, okay? So as we're talking about the goal, and I'm glad that Max mentioned this, you've had a chance to watch some really good strikers, excellent strikers at Craven Cottage. I'm curious your thoughts about what you're seeing from him, and even compare him to when Jimenez was in there, because it's different now. It's almost like we're going back to the Mitro days, the way we're playing, because I think we played differently with Jimenez. So I want to get your thoughts on the goal, but I also want to talk about Muniz in general.
Look, Muniz manages to, I mean, he holds the ball up actually quite well. And there are several times in the match he was able to hold it up and bring players onto him, which, you know, is something that Mitro tended to be very good at, as well as scoring goals. That's not the kind of play that Jimenez, whom I actually do rate highly since he's recovered from his injury. I actually think Jimenez is a pretty good striker once he sort of came back to the form he had when he was at Wolves. But he's a different type of striker, Muniz, from Jimenez. But he combines, you know, strength with an ability to move, an ability to score goals. He's not a speedy racer running off the last man, but he, you know, he's pretty quick. He's pretty mobile, and, you know, he knows where to be. And I think it's all been an incredible surprise. As he's been able to get more minutes, he's just seemed to have grown in confidence. It's a little, I mean, sometimes these players that just hit a purple patch, I mean, you will remember last season that didn't Manner Solomon score 5 goals in 5 games for us?
He did.
And every time he came onto the pitch, you felt like he was going to cut in from the left side and curl a shot from with his right foot to score. You know, sometimes these players, they get very hot, and he just feels, Rodrigo Muniz feels, you know, feels like he's very confident in his game. I would contrast that, for example, with Andres Pereira, who, you know, had a one-on-one and didn't pull the trigger. And I don't think he really believed he could score. I mean, it had to be on his left foot, and I just didn't believe he could score. And, you know, what makes a player feel confident or not? I don't know. It's pretty intangible.
Okay, excellent. I want to share this. This is from Tony. Greetings from Los Angeles. Greetings, Tony. Thank you for joining us on this episode. Okay. Giannis, back over to you. What your thoughts about all this? It's interesting. I'm glad that Craig actually brought up a very interesting discussion piece. Manner Solomon scored all those goals. He had a huge purple patch, and then unfortunately other teams figured him out. So should we be concerned that that might happen here with Muniz, or is it basically apples and oranges?
No, I don't want to come. Manner who? Never heard of him. Solomon. Who's ever going to forget that winner down at the Amex? No, I wouldn't worry about it, because I think he's got. You hate to bring this up, but it is what it is. I mean, you've got the native speaking there. You've got William there. You've got Paulinho in there. You've got Pereira in there. You've got a Portuguese-speaking coach. You've got Morte. I mean, it does contribute. And I think that sometimes things can be lost in translation for foreign players, whether we like to say it or not. And Muniz, he's hit the purple patch, but I think he's the sort of boy where he's not going to let it get to his head. I think that's going to be the thing. He's a big, strong specimen. He's a youngster, but I think he's pretty humble. We saw with Manner, he thought that the grass was greener on the other side. He's gone to Tottenham, fine. But Muniz has toughed it out. And going to Middlesbrough on loan is never the funnest thing. And then to come back, and of course then Jimenez came in. Let's not forget Vinicius. And he was really number three in the pecking order. And then all of a sudden, Jimenez gets injured. You ship Vinicius out on loan. And now he's basically said, right, it's you, boy. Do what you got to do. And he's done it. He's played with aplomb, and it's great. And the Fulham, we're all warming to Muniz, which is great. You saw the reception when he was subbed yesterday for Broha. I don't know what Broha's thinking right now, because I think there's some real ability there. I really do. But he's been a bit unlucky, because he's come in to a squad thinking, I'm going to start. And Muniz has gone, no, you're not. Not here, mate. Not going to happen. So, good for Muniz, and let's hope he can make it 6-6 next week.
Okay, excellent. All right, guys, let's transition into the second half. And Craig, I'm going to go right back to you, because Fulham did create a good amount of opportunities. You had that one from Wilson. You had a few from Andres Pereira, and that was probably right in front of you. So give us your analysis of what you watched in that second half. We'll talk about the Traore goal at the end to finish off the match. But you have some opportunities also from Brighton and Hove Albion. They were much better in the second half. They went for it. They were trying to score to make a 2-1. They were maybe a little bit unlucky not to get a goal. But like you were talking about, informed strikers, you know, maybe that was the difference there. So your thoughts on the second half?
It was end-to-end stuff. I mean, there were a lot of open spaces. They threw men forward. We had the counterattack. I mean, the pace dropped off a little bit at a couple points, but it was pretty end-to-end stuff. We looked a little tired and leggy in parts, and I thought that there was a period kind of 65, 70 minutes where it felt like we were a little bit on the ropes, and that they came close to scoring. They're going over the top and beating us. But they didn't really change their shape that much. They made 2 substitutions at halftime. But they still kept that three-man back. Maybe you could argue out of possession they were more four in the back, but they look like they basically kept the same setup, but they were just much more assertive. So, and we started to tire, and I think when you're chasing the ball, we don't have a lot of possession on the ball, it is a little bit more tiring. I think the substitutions actually were pretty timely. And having somebody like Kearney in the team at that juncture was very important because he's very good at calming things down, maintaining possession, and ensuring we can, you know, keep the ball a little bit longer. Because I think the danger often is when you don't have possession and they just keep coming at you, at some point you concede.
Okay, excellent stuff there, Craig. Over to you, Giannis. What's interesting about a 2-0 lead, I've heard this over and over again, that it's actually a dangerous lead because if they score the goal, then it's 2-1. Then who knows what's going to happen from there. So how did you feel Fulham handled the second half? Obviously, they were creating a good amount of opportunities. I'm glad that Craig brought up the substitutions because I think they were timely. It's a very good point by him. Overall, what are your thoughts about what you saw from Fulham in the second half?
Well, we knew they were going to throw everything but the kitchen sink on second half. You knew that De Zerbi was going to be suitably annoyed about what he the first half. I was very surprised that Nsiso was subbed for Fati because he's not really lit the Premier League on fire. I was really surprised that Lamptey was subbed for Adingra. I might have bought Pascal Gross on. Pascal Gross for me was the key. He's had such a great season for them. So he came on the hour mark, and then I thought, well, we might have a problem here because he's fairly certain to be part of the German setup for the Euros coming up. But when I think he brought Kearney and Willian on first with Pereira and Iwobi, and I thought that was those were the right decisions because you know with Kearney he's going to calm things down. With Willian he's very very good in terms of ball possession and distribution, and I think by the 70-minute mark, I thought Brighton's race had been run. They looked a little distracted. And I don't really blame them for that. As I said, they got a huge game coming up this week, and I wish them all the best. They're a great rep for England, and I hope they knock Roma off. But there was lots of to and fro. I didn't really think we were in any sort of danger, except for that Ferguson miss. And really, he's
right.
You know, he's got to put that away. But apart from, wasn't it Buonanotte got to hit the post?
He did.
That was a little fortuitous. But I didn't really think it in the second half. I didn't. Even if they'd scored, I still think we would have held on.
Okay, excellent. All right. Max, I'm going to give you the duty of talking about Adama Traore and his goal, but obviously also share your thoughts on the second half, and we'll end with you sharing your thoughts on Adama making it 3-0.
Yeah, I actually disagree with you, honest. I think if they'd scored, made it 2-1, I think we draw or even lose. The momentum just felt it was totally shifting, and the goals changed games. So I really, the way we were so pinned back at times towards the hour mark, 70-minute mark, they had more than enough time to get a second after they scored the first, and it was just so crucial that Leno stayed strong. They couldn't finish, and the post saved us. And whenever a team at the college is attacking the Putney end and has away fans there, it just feels like it's a different situation. They just get surged with confidence based on the away fans. That's just my take. But, you know, we held strong, rode our luck, and the high press from Deco Dovrid was excellent.
Yep.
The commentators were making a big deal about how Pascal Gross coming on was going to change the match. And they weren't wrong. It changed the match in the sense it gave us a third goal. And he really dilly-dallied on it. And I thought Deco Dovrid, you know, excellent in terms of he held on to it the perfect amount of time. He played a ball right into Adama Traore's path. And the composure from Traore was excellent to put it through the keeper's legs to make it 3-0. And the most satisfying of endings to a game.
Okay, excellent. All right, guys, I have a couple of comments I wanted to share. This is from actually Neil Stewart. So here's one that I'm sure we're going to hear a lot about. He says, I just was listening to TalkSport and the Man U supporter was calling for De Zerbi. How long until the calls are for Marco? Giannis, are you concerned about that?
What, are they looking for toilet cleaners? calling for De Zerbi for what? They can get lost. Abject arrogance of Manu. Seriously, really? You really think you can just pick up a phone? It's not like 15, 20 years. It's not like Sir Alex has left the building. This isn't the elite job that everybody says it is. It isn't. Liverpool are going to lose Klopp. That is an elite job. Not Man U, who are, you know, struggling, doing what? A team that doesn't have an identity. What are you going to do? It's like going into Chelsea. You saw the Pochettino interview last night. He looked lost. He's going, what am I doing with these people with 8-year contracts?
I wouldn't touch and that job. No. I would not touch the Chelsea job. I wouldn't touch the Man U job, Giannis.
No. I mean, no. And so to answer Neil, De Zerbi is a very good manager. I don't think De Zerbi is smart on that. And how long until the calls are for Marco? They may not be far off, but I think that with Marco, he's a man who's got a vision about what he wants and the way he wants us to play. And I think he's still got a bee in his bonnet about what happened, certainly at Everton and at Watford. And that is why I think he's here for the long haul. And that's bad news for other teams. You can't just, you know, pick up a phone and go, yeah, we'll take your manager. No, I mean, look what's happened with, who is it? Brighton, the rumour has it that with De Zerbi, was it Barcelona might be after him? And Brighton saying, no, you can't, not unless you give us a £12 million release. No. De Zerbi's not going in. De Zerbi's not going anywhere. I'll tell you that. De Zerbi's not going anywhere and Marco's not going anywhere either.
Okay, I'm glad that you put a stop to that, Giannis. That makes me feel a hell of a lot better. Okay, guys, let's finish up the show. And let's talk about Man of the Match. If you're watching live, feel free to share your thoughts on who was Man of the Match here. Okay, Craig, I'll go to you first. Who's your Man of the Match?
Rodrigo Muniz.
Wow. Okay. Any thoughts?
Doesn't need an explanation.
No explanation. Okay. Okay. Any honorable mentions?
Honorable mentions. I think Harry Wilson or Tim Castagna.
Yeah, we haven't talked about him today.
Yeah, but I think he had a pretty solid game. And he's been, coming in where Kenny Tete was dominating the position. I think Castagna's been actually pretty solid and hasn't made very many mistakes.
Okay, very good. All right, I'm going to just share some comments while we do this before I go over to you, Giannis. We have Stefan says Bassi. Our friend here says Harry Wilson. We have a few that are saying Harry Wilson. They're coming in very quickly here. Eric says Harry. Okay, over to you, Giannis. Who do you have?
It's got to be the Putney Pele. It's got to be. It's got to be Muniz. And with honorable mentions, I thought Wilson was excellent. I thought Bassi was excellent. Craig mentioned Castagna. Castagna's done a brilliant job. And I think Lukic had a very, very solid game yesterday. Very, very, very neat and tidy. But Muniz, again, was just, he was in that total, utter nuisance. And the reception he got when he was subbed for Broja is testimony to the performance that he had. So for me, it's got to be the Moo Man.
Okay. Max, before I go to you, I'm going to share some more here. So we got this from David Wellington. Muniz, although Wilson and Bassi also would be a fair shout. Our friend Combe goes with Muniz is for me, Bassi, honorable mention. And our friend Black, White, and Fred, Wilson, man of the match for his best performance since the championship. Muniz, close second, and Bassi for honorable mention. So we're naming the players here. So who's your man of the match to end the show?
Clean sweep, all three of the co-hosts. I'm going to say Muniz. I like the Putney Pele. I like that, Giannis. Yeah, because he created Wilson's goal, and his goal of itself was just great. So, I easily could have gone Wilson, but I'm going to go Muniz just for the confidence factor.
Okay, I'm going to add to it, and I'm going to say Rodrigo Muniz, so we'll go four. So there you go. Everyone's going with Rodrigo Muniz. Crazy that we're doing this, but listen, the proof is in the pudding. So that's our man of the match. Fantastic show, guys. This is a fantastic show. Before we wrap it up, I just want to get final thoughts from all my co-hosts. First, over to you, Craig. Your final thoughts on the show and looking forward to the Wolves match.
Look, I think we're safe from relegation. I don't think we will make it to Europe, unfortunately. So we're a little bit in no man's land. We want to keep racking up the wins. We have a really tough fixture schedule. And so I think we're probably going to end up sort of mid-table-ish by the end of the season. We won't be relegated, but I don't think we'll make it to Europe.
Okay. Basically, mid-table. Okay, Giannis, your final thoughts.
Couldn't agree more. The fixtures, we've still got to play Bus Stop United away. We've got some, you know, we've got Luton away last game of the season. We've got Sheffield United away. We've got a tough fixture list coming up. But the home games are going to be great for the fans. I mean, the City and Liverpool are going to have an impact on who wins the title. Tottenham will have an impact on who makes it to Champions League with Villa in a strong position. The Luton Town one could be interesting because of its last game of the season, but with the hearings for Everton and Nottingham Forest coming down, Forest could well be going down, I think. So it could come down to that last game. So it's going to be great. We're going to have some good games. And if we finish 13th, 14th, we've still have had a very good season.
Okay, what about this, Giannis? Goal should be to be above Chelsea and Brentford from Carl Tanner.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That lot at Stamford, Fulham B down at the bridge. And then that lot in Hounslow, Osterley, or whatever, Kew Gardens, whatever you want to call them. Them, 26 points. And they're going to lose Ivan Toney. So they've just picked up a striker from Belgium for 36 million. But they're not out of the woods. They're not out of the woods yet.
No.
They're not out of the woods yet, no.
No, it's nice to see. I'm going to leave it there. Okay. Max, you're going to have a final word, so your final thoughts.
It's all about planning for next season now. Let's try to not make the same mistakes we made this offseason. You know, take advantage of the transfer window and be, as Russ likes to say, proactive and not reactive. Because it looks like, as you know, Craig and Yana said, we'll be mid-table. Won't get Europe. Won't get relegated. That's an accolade, I think, given how tough the Premier League is nowadays and how we know how we were the yo-yo club and now we're not. And that's big.
No more yo-yo, Max.
How can we push on? How can we push on? Keep Marco. That's obviously huge, the contract. And we know some players might leave this summer. And we need to bring players in of higher caliber or equal caliber. So
that's right.
I'm looking forward to that. And let's just enjoy it because, you know, it's not often that we can be comfortable at the end of the season. It was last season and now this season. And every other season, it's been stressful.
I'm there with you. I just want to share a couple more comments. This is from our friend, Black, White, and Fred. West London Mini League Champions, I'm all for that. And, Colm, I want to thank you for this because I don't say it enough. Hit the like button. Please do subscribe to our YouTube channel. That would be a big help. And also subscribe on where you get your podcast. Please do that. So I appreciate that, Colm. I don't do that enough. So thank you very much for saying that. Okay. And of course, Steve Reynolds feels like he needs the final word. So give Muniz a pay rise. I agree with that, Steve. We talked about that this morning. Okay. Great show. But it is time to wrap it up. For Craig Coben, Yana Shanaeus, and Matt Cohen, I'm Russ Coben. Thank you as always for watching and listening to College Talk, part of the TalkSport Fan Network. It's the 90th minute, and all to play for at the end of the match. All your mates are around. You've got your McDonald's share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? I know I'm in. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.